I love how they have Stenhouse's sponsor formatted on this. It's all bunched up into one word.
Sugarland's Ego Brunch in a jar, shipping.
Yeah.
Shipping cream Chevy.
Bunched. Brunch jar, sipping cream.
I don't know what you guys are saying, but I feel like I'm having a stroke.
We're trying to read a sponsor. It says, and I quote, Sugarland's / Ego's Brunch jar sipping cream.
What is that?
It's an Ego, and I think it's a collaboration with like a whiskey, a moonshine company.
Yeah, Sugarland's is vodka.
Yeah. So Ego vodka.
Yeah, you can get some. Yeah.
Interesting.
You've already got Sunny D vodka. Why not have Ego vodka?
Yeah, breakfast. Don't call it a NASCAR classic. That reference will make sense later in the show, but that's how we're referring to William Byron's dominating win in Sunday's NASCAR Cup Series race at Watkins International. The Hendrick Motorsports driver earned his fifth win of the 2023 season, and also the fifth consecutive win for Hendrick Motorsports at the road course in Watkins Glen, New York. I'm Daniel McFadden, host of Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and I am once again joined by my co-host, Jared Haas, to talk about last weekend's race. Jared, it was a dominating win. It was an uneventful win in New York. What is your main takeaways from Mr. Byron's fifth win of the 2023 season?
I knew Indy was quick, but this was quicker. Holy cow.
I wish all races could end by 4 p.m. Central. What about you?
See, this is what you get for not having these stage breaks. If you make the one mistake, hey, guess what? It can completely up in your face. And we'll have a lot to talk about what happened in this race. But I'm surprised that we were able to maintain that pace of being under 2 hours.
It's, according to our friend at Front Stretch, Dalton, it's the shortest. Okay, this race was ran in 1 hour, 58 minutes, and 48 seconds. And according to our friend Dalton, that's the shortest cup race time-wise in the modern era, which started in 1972. I'm all for a short race like this. I just wish it could have been a more eventful short race. Because
if you're going to win for eventful,
yeah,
and short,
I know, yeah,
are completely opposite spectrums on that, Daniel.
I know. But basically three things happened in this race. Michael McDowell passed Denny Hamlin for the lead on like lap 4. And then Michael McDowell had 2 pit road penalties. And then Michael McDowell's car broke down.
Mm-hmm.
And Chase Elliott ran out of gas, which brought out the only caution in this race. Otherwise, William Byron led 66 laps and just ran away with it. So that's what happened.
It's surprising. William Byron, since his win at Atlanta, this is his first top 10. He finished 24th, 14th, 21st, 35th, 14th. He's not at a top 10 since his win at Atlanta.
Wow.
So, good time to come back. And I think William Byron would rather have that dry spell before the playoffs instead of now.
Oh, yeah. He talked about post-race that this kind of happened last year, too. They had a dry spell in the summer months and then kind of picked up pace in the postseason. But, yeah, William Byron delivers Hendrick Motorsports its fifth consecutive win at Watkins Glen. Where was that stat? Crud.
I mean, their record was their streak like that in their team history.
Yeah, the most recent was Pocono from 2012 to 2014. The record for the team is 6 straight wins, and that came at Phoenix Raceway from 2007 to 2009. So for a year from now, we'll figure out if we remember this stat. If we remember, we'll see. All right, can they match their Phoenix mark? But really, yeah, the only things to talk about really about coming out of this race are the fact that Chase Elliott and Bubba Wallace are, and a bunch of other people are in must-win scenarios because there's one spot left.
Yeah.
In the playoffs. Kevin Harvick and Brad Keselowski are now locked in the playoffs, and that leaves one spot. And Bubba Wallace is now plus 32 points in the standings.
It made it pretty simple with the math. I mean, there is a way for mathematically for like Ty Gibbs and Daniel Suarez to jump in, you know, by points. But those are the only two drivers. AJ Allmendinger's too far out. And then you made mention Alex Bowman and Chase Elliott. They're, you know, they're mathematically cannot jump into the playoffs. They have to win a Daytona.
Yeah, plus 32 over Ty Gibbs. Daniel Suarez minus 43. Allmendinger's minus 72. Alex Bowman is minus 96.
Yeah, that's 70. Yep, that's too far back.
So, but yeah, that makes this weekend's race at Daytona very, 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 very interesting. But again, just going back to the length of this race, there was just the one caution for Chase Elliott running out of gas and coming to a stop there at the bus stop, which frankly, there's been lots of, you know, criticism directed at the team because it was Chase got the wrong information. You flip the switch on your extra fuel tank.
Mm-hmm.
And he was told by his crew chief, Alan Gustafson, that he had three extra laps. Nope. Didn't. Ran out of gas. I thought it was kind of a funny caution. Especially disappointing for him, given the circumstances which he faced in order to get in the playoffs. But I thought it was, frankly, hilarious. I mean,
that's the thing. The teams feel like more now than ever, they are running on the edge of saving fuel, right? I mean, you saw it during pace laps. The drivers, they were saving fuel. They were cutting the car off so that way they can run that extra two laps mm-hmm. under green, push that stage thing, you know, push it past, push it farther and push it farther. Chase Elliott just pushed it too far.
For years, at the start of races, you hear the command to start engines, and then you'll hear a crew chief over the radio tells the driver, all right, don't forget, we're saving gas, mm-hmm. saving gas. And it's always annoyed the heck out of me. It's like, really? Really?
But again, it's that advantage. If you save enough fuel, that's going to be that difference right there. You never know when you're going to need it.
And like up until Chase Elliott's caution, I thought the race was going to go green the entire way. The entire way. Because if you look at the numbers for the last 2 years outside of COTA, cautions on road courses for accident. Oh, I guess COTA and really the Roval.
Yeah.
Really. All the other tracks, pretty much. The caution has been for debris, fluid, cars stuck in sand, or in Chase Elliott's case, running out of gas and coming to a stop on the track.
Usually,
no accidents.
Yeah, and you notice where those accidents have been happening. Look at COTA, look at Roval. Those have been really those sharp hairpin type of corners. Like I said, they had the dive bomb and they cluster themselves. This next gen's not really suited for more of this long, you know, long elongated type of tracks like Watkins Glen is where cautions do happen, but also too it's a road course. There's a little bit more leeway. I think what Eric Almirola spun off of turn 11, I believe.
Yeah.
So there's been incidents that happen. It's just
Suarez spun in the grass on the carousel.
Yeah. So there's incidents that have happened. It's just and Harrison Burton spun as well in the carousel.
Okay, right.
At the beginning of the race. So stuff can happen. It's just what brings out a caution and not a lot in these cases.
Especially with Watkins Glen. I don't know when remember exactly when they did it, but adding the paved runoffs. Like in turn one, turn six, and also the carousel. I think that's
Yeah, the carousel, the coming off of... yeah, there used to be a lot more grass and gravel in there, especially in turn one. I think it was the mid-2000s. They've used that, but there's the image circulating online in the Xfinity Series race where everybody's outside the track, basically.
Guys, the track's over here.
There's no track limits here. But yeah, that's...
Well, and it benefited the racing of Watkins Glen, especially in the 2010s. Look at the 2012...
Yeah.
Race.
Everyone gets a scaddle. You know, they're not stuck in the gravel if they all go out there.
Yeah.
You know, there's the pros and cons. I mean, it would be a little bit more interesting if that wasn't paved. I'm not saying we need to throw grass back on there or we need to have track limits, but just imagine having that type of racing on that.
But this also raises the question, should we have gotten rid of the stage brakes at road course? And I'm like, no.
No, I mean, you're still going to have those play out, right? It's still going to be this type of, you know, type of race. It was just the cautions just reset everybody, and you're not going to have, like, people dive bombing after the end of stage two.
Well, let me rephrase that. I think they should have gotten rid of the stage breaks on road courses. So that was my answer to that. That should have been, like, I think that was a great idea.
Yeah, and it proved the test of the durability, and these drivers are like, well, I don't have a stage break. I just got to motor it through and make sure that, hey, you know what? I can't depend on that stage break. I got to be perfect throughout the gate. And I think that that gives a little bit where it's, you know, you can't make that mistake.
And because of this new rule with no stage breaks, the last two races have only had one caution. Before last week in Indianapolis, the last time a cup race went with only one caution was 2012 at Auto Club Speedway. And the only reason that caution even happened was because of rain. So it'd been a long time. Then we get two straight weeks. And the last time there were two consecutive cup races, this is according to NASCAR Man on Twitter, the last time there was two consecutive NASCAR Cup races with only one caution was June 1978 at the now defunct Riverside Raceway in Michigan. And as NASCAR Man tweeted, oddly enough, the following race was the Firecracker 400 at Daytona.
Sometimes history repeats itself. But again, you know who's happy about this? The team owners. They don't have to come home with wrecked cars, and, you know, there's not a lot of cautions with that. Save a little bit of money going into Daytona.
Yeah, which is going to be that's going to be a night. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a night. Before we move on, here's some audio and video from William Byron, the race winner, after he earned his ninth career NASCAR Cup Series win, his fifth of the season, which leads the series, which I don't think, if you had asked me before the season going into the postseason, would William Byron be leading the series in wins, I would have said probably not. What about you?
Hendrick Motorsports, there's that high expectation, yeah. Right? He didn't really have that breakout. He would have a couple wins in those seasons.
He went winless his first two.
Yeah, he won two wins last season, and I believe a win before. In those previous two seasons before. So two wins in 2022, a one in 2021, and a win in 2020. So now Byron's starting to act more like the top dog in Hendrick Motorsports, which a little bit surprising considering the fact that Kyle Larson's is there. But on the other side of the coin, you have Chase Elliott and Alex Bowman winless this season.
Yeah, Bowman.
I think that's the more surprising part right there.
Well, yeah, but, you know, given that they have extenuating circumstances.
But still, they've competed in quite a few races. It's not like they missed. This is like their first race back. But that's still the more surprising factor of that is that those two drivers are winless compared to William Byron winning five races.
But yeah, here's William Byron and what it meant for him to finally get a road course win in his career at Watkins Glen.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't really thought about that, but it is cool. We have a variety of racetracks that we've won races on, so that's neat for our team. You know, I think road courses this year have been really tough for us. I think we started the year strong at COTA, had top two speed. Reddick was a car to beat, but we were a close second there, and I felt like, you know, we could build on that for the rest of the year, and I got excited for the road courses, and then we just went through a slump there with Sonoma and Chicago, where it was just really tough for us, and we struggled. And then I think, you know, we started to turn the corner at Indy last week. You know, we had a lot of speed coming from the back, just had good grip in our car, felt like I could push the car to make lap time, and I felt optimistic coming here that we could run well. But Rudy kind of kept talking me down. He's like, okay, we just need to get a solid, you know, top 10. And I think I really just felt optimistic that we could run well. But as soon as we got out there in practice and the way the car felt through some of the corners that are really important here, I just felt really good about what we had. So, just really proud of the team. It's cool to get that first road course win. It's taken a lot of effort. Big thanks to Max and everything that we've kind of put into it, and it's nice to see it pay off.
All right, so that was William Byron following his win Sunday at Watkins Glen. So this was you got a feel for Michael McDowell coming off a win, the most dominating win of his career at Indianapolis, and then the next weekend he's the first and only guy to not finish at Watkins Glen, the only DNF.
Yeah, after finished last.
Yeah, led 16 some laps, won a stage. I mean, that's a swing. That's going from one end to the other. But it's
the extreme swing right there. I mean, right. I mean, McDowell's on top of the world, winning in Indianapolis, locked himself in the playoffs, looked like a contender again. And I was like, I mean, McDowell performed well, but I was like, stay from McDowell. And he finished last with those electrical issues. So, I mean, you know, that's the high and lows of motorsports. That's the reality of the situation. And McDowell knows that best, I think, of all people. He's been in the highs and lows of motorsports. So, you know, it's just tough break that he had electrical issues, and that was a pretty strong car for McDowell as well.
And he did earn a playoff point. He now has 7, which ties him with Christopher Bell. Next up on that list would be Ryan Blaney and Joey Logano. They each have 8. But still, he's got a shot coming this weekend at Daytona to help pad that situation going into the playoffs. All right, so enough with Watkins Glen. Again, was it a classic? So now we're going to go on to our news roundup for this week. All right, Jared. So last week, a really, 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 really cool thing came into existence on the interwebs, known as NASCAR Classics. If you haven't heard yet, NASCAR has, as part of its 75th anniversary, has launched a new website and also a YouTube side of it called NASCAR Classics, which has a good chunk of NASCAR Cup Series races from its start in the early 50s up until a couple weeks ago. Go to classics.nascar.com and you can watch all these races. There are chunks missing from certain seasons, like 2008, I believe, has a lot of missing races.
There's some that are missing on that, but I think the more important part is the quality was quite well.
Oh no, these are the masters.
Yeah,
especially from the tape era. These are the tapes. Like, you can go and watch the first ESPN broadcast NASCAR race from 1981 at Rockingham Speedway, and it looks incredible. It looks just spick span new for what it is. Looks very clear. It doesn't have the tracking you'd get from a VHS upload on YouTube, which is where most of these races only existed up until last week.
It's just good for historic sake, just to keep everything there all in this one place, and, you know, the master quality of that, and be like, you know, sometimes you don't catch those little details that are on there on the track too, and be like, okay, there's actually a difference between these cars in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, I found the Don Gills car from Sonoma that Jeffrey Bodine had with the QVC. QVC ran a promotion where you got to put your name and face on the hood, and so her name's on the side of the car in the hood, and you can see her clearly on the hood. So those are the unique details you can pick up on. But
so how much digging have you done?
You know, I dig. I mean, it's tough to be where to start. That is the question.
One thing I found cool is they have the last cup race that was held at the Nashville Fairgrounds on there back in 1984.
Yep.
Which is fascinating, especially now with them trying to resurrect that track. So you can get to go see that track in all of its NASCAR Cup Series glory back in the heyday. And again, just great quality, especially for a short track night race from the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. It looks great. I mean, and a lot of some of these races on there have been lost to time.
Yeah.
Like, so this is like the first time public audiences are getting to see it since like they aired. I know the only race I've watched all of since the launch, I watched the June 1999 Cup race at Michigan.
Yeah, you chronicled that on Twitter. Yes. Yeah,
which was a caution-free race won by Dale Jarrett. And it's one of the few races I actually remember watching live, because I remember just being so bored to death because there was no cautions, nothing happened. But upon rewatch, the first like hour or so of the race are actually very racy, very, very, very competitive and actually fun to watch. And then pit stops start happening and then everything gets strung out and Dale Jarrett runs away and wins it. So what, before we move on, like, what's a race you're looking forward to checking out on there?
Oh gosh. I mean, there's gotta be stuff in the 90s. I mean, that's the heyday type of stuff, right? Is just there is so much. There is so much. I was watching 97 from Sonoma, just seeing like the different layouts. Like Sonoma was the carousel before.
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, again, there's a lot where you can go here. You can spend a lot of hours in here. I'll say this much.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking it out every once in a while. That's at classics.nascar.com, and you can, again, look it up on YouTube at youtube.com/NASCAR Classics.
And it's free.
And it's free. And what do you want for free? Just a good chunk of NASCAR history. Hopefully, they'll add some Busch series, some truck series stuff on there. I kind of doubt they'll just like throw up random like practice sessions or happy hours, but that
you never know. Again, you never know. But I mean, we got one side of the story, and then we got another interesting news bit as well.
Yes, yes. So some of you may know, last year NASCAR and NBC produced a Chasing the Championship kind of series, documenting it was the whole season pretty much. But it aired at a lousy like 10 p.m. at night on a Thursday on the USA Network. Didn't get more than, you know, 200,000 people per
they didn't do per well episode. Numbers, yeah.
They waited till like episode the middle of the season. Oh, maybe we should put this on Peacock for more people to watch. And so they waited very late in the game. All this was in a hope of having a series much in the vein as Drive to Survive, the Formula One series on Netflix that took people by storm and has helped boost that series' popularity in the United States to untold numbers in that series' history over the last few years. And now, made official yesterday, NASCAR's finally getting some of that cool Netflix attention. There will be a 5-episode series, 45 minutes each, chronicling the 2003 playoffs that will premiere on Netflix sometime early next year.
Sure, yeah.
I would hope before Daytona. I would hope.
That's a tough turnaround to say.
I know.
You can hope and pray, but dollar bills is going to make the difference. But I mean, it's a unique process, again, hopefully to capitalize on some of the mistakes that, you know, the USA was on TV, wasn't on a streaming service until Peacock took it over, and Netflix has a lot bigger audience compared to Peacock.
It's the largest streaming service. Like, that's
where eyeballs.
You want to be.
Eyeballs.
Absolutely. The really interesting part of this, it's executive produced by Dale Earnhardt Jr., so you got his input on this, which is, I think, very valuable, but it's also produced by the people who were behind the very successful and the very good The Last Dance, Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls documentary, which documented the 1998, his final season with the Bulls. That came out right around the time that, you know, COVID was happening. So everyone was locked in their houses watching that. And it was really, really good. And these people also were part of the OJ Making America documentary that premiered a few years before that won awards and was also very, very good. If you haven't watched either of them, Jared, you should.
I guess I got a lot to watch this week, but I mean, we got another thing to watch as well too and listen to. You did an interview.
Yep. We don't normally cover IndyCar on this podcast, but our friends at Worldwide Technology Raceway in St. Louis, they are hosting the IndyCar series this Sunday. And as part of that, they connected us with a 2-time IndyCar champion and an Indy 500 winner, Will Power. So I got to talk to the Team Penske driver for about 10 minutes last week, previewing this weekend's race and a lot of other stuff. I asked him if he has any interest in getting into a cup car to test, and also if he could add any oval tracks to the IndyCar schedule, what would he add? But it was a nice short chat for about 10 minutes. So here's my interview with Will Power.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Finally, good to see you after a 15-minute delay. I hope things are working on your end now.
Yeah, we got it. We got it rolling. It's a little bit spotty because I'm here in Sebring, so I'm not on Wi-Fi. Yeah.
All right. So what are you up to in Sebring?
We're testing the new hybrid system, the IndyCar. We're doing a 2-day test here. We'll see how it works. The first full-blown test, it has everything on it, that will be run next year. So it'll be interesting.
Okay. So how are you feeling coming out of Indy and going towards Gateway?
I think we had a really fast race car at the Indy GP, just started too far back. So, you know, I think qualifying's being our weakness this year. Certainly got the race pace, but felt like I should have won the race last year at Gateway. I mean, Worldwide Technologies Raceway. We had an unfortunate timing of yellow, you could say, but it was on us that we didn't make the right call there. But I'm very determined to win an oval. It's been a long time. Very, very determined. And plus, I'm out of the championship, so I can take some risk in strategy and so on. Mm. Not really points racing. So I think, never be too overconfident, but I'm going to put the work in and do my absolute best.
So when was your last oval win?
I don't know.
It's been that long.
I couldn't tell you. I don't want to say it was the Indianapolis 500. I mean,
oh wow,
it's been a long while. It's been a long while, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, had a couple seconds and such, but yep.
All right.
Time to change it. Time to get an oval win.
Okay. So when you hear the name Gateway, like, what's the first thing that pops in your head about that track?
It's unique. It's got that very sort of high banked turn 1-2 that's pretty tight, and then you've got 3-4, which is almost wide open in qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's a pretty good racetrack. Last year we had two lanes in turn 1-2, which made for some good passing, and it's always really interesting on the strategy front. It always seems to be, you know, turn into either a fuel race or tires. I just got a text message, by the way. My last win was 2019 at Pocono.
Wow.
It's been a while, man.
I'm really shocked by that. I'm surprised. Wow. It's
been a while. We don't do very many ovals. So
yeah, I know.
You only get 5 a year. So it's tough. But when you look at Newgarden's records... It's all these ones for the last few years.
Yeah. So if he can do it, you can do it, right? So
absolutely, exactly. That is the attitude. That's exactly what you've got to know and think.
Right, so with only, I know, 5 races, but technically 4 oval tracks, if I made you Roger Penske for a day and you could add one oval to the IndyCar schedule, what oval would it be?
Oh man, like, I actually like Homestead. I think that's a pretty good oval if they don't resurface it for us. And Richmond would probably, I think Richmond would be good for us. It's hard to say, but I think Richmond could race sort of like Iowa, which is our best.
That seems like the closest comparison.
Yeah, best oval for racing. Yeah.
So if I took Indianapolis off the table, what is your favorite oval?
Iowa has been my favorite oval. Haven't won there. Iowa and Gateway would be sort of up there, those two.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think. But Iowa is pretty fun.
Okay. So at Indy, you had the crossover weekend with NASCAR, but NASCAR had, you know, a bunch of international stars who were there for that weekend. Did you get to, like, meet any of them, interact with any of them? You had two Australian V8 racers there. Did you get to meet them at all?
I did not get to see them. I didn't get to see them. We were sort of super busy Friday, Saturday. Then I just flew out straight away. But I watched on TV with interest. And I do know both those Aussie guys, Australian. One's Kiwi, but I do know both of them.
What's your impression of them?
They're I don't know them that well, like, personally. Okay. Very good drivers. You know, obviously Shane did a phenomenal job to win that race on the streets of Chicago. I knew that the Indy road course would be a tougher for him because all those guys have been there.
Mm-hmm.
You're not racing in between walls, so it's a little bit easier for everyone. But you think about all those Cup, NASCAR Cup guys. I mean, that street race was their first street race ever for a lot of them, probably most or almost all of them.
Yeah.
So that was happening while I think it's a perfect storm for Van Gisbergen. But I tell you what, he shouldn't be ashamed of finishing 10th amongst that. Those guys, those Cup guys, are no joke. They're seriously good drivers. So, yeah.
So I'm curious, being from Australia, when was the first time you came and like visited America? Like, how old were you when you first came over here?
Yeah, it was about 19 years ago, in 2005.
Oh wow,
that 19? Yeah, no, that's 18. I've been in the series 18 years, so been racing IndyCar 18 years, and that's when I came to the US.
What was like the biggest like culture shock for you when you came over here for the first time? Like, what was like the biggest thing that stood out for you that was completely different from Australia?
It's very difficult to get good quality healthy food. It still is. It's like really, really hard to get good quality food. But I tell you, it is seriously the greatest country in the world as far as opportunity, because of the population. You think about Australia's 25 million people, where over here it's almost 300 million people, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the opportunities and chances you get in sport, business, really anything, is just much bigger and easier than Australia and other countries. I think it really is a great country for opportunity. That's the biggest thing that I've noticed over these 18 years, is how much opportunity and everything you have here if you're willing to put the work in. Yeah, very good, very good.
Okay. So racing culture-wise, what is the racing culture in Australia compared to over here in America? How are they like? How are they different?
I think it's hard to say, because in IndyCar it's very multicultural, multinational. You got many different nationalities in there, so it's quite friendly amongst all the drivers. I feel like in Australia everyone's kind of envious of each other, and they all really bicker a lot. It's quite a friendly paddock, I would say. I think it's, you know, I raced in Europe for 3 years, and I think it's the same sort of cutthroat feel. Europe's more cutthroat. US IndyCar, it's pretty friendly, pretty. I don't know whether it's the culture here or what, but I guess you would say, I think the culture in NASCAR is the same, like pretty friendly paddock.
Yeah, that might change if you're actually driving in the NASCAR paddock.
Sorry?
That might change if you're actually a driver in the NASCAR paddock.
Hard to say, but I kind of got the impression that it is sort of the same in that paddock, but you might, I don't know, I couldn't tell you for sure, but just speaking with the guys that race in my team, seems like a pretty friendly paddock. Yeah.
Have you ever asked Roger Penske for the chance to test a NASCAR stock car?
I haven't. I may have, like, really early in my career, and he said, win a championship and a 500 and we'll talk. Well, I've won two and a 500. But, yeah, it's not. It's got to make sense, really. You're not doing it just for fun, because it costs a lot of money to do a test. But, yeah, I would like to run actually a road course race. I mean, you always want to run an oval, because – it'd be good, but it'd be just such a tough transition,
He let Brad Keselowski drive an IndyCar Road America, so it's,
yeah,
all's fair now. You should bring it back up to him.
Yeah, I should try drive one just for a bit of fun. I think the testing rules, though, are much stricter now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's much harder to get a go.
So what's on your bucket list in racing? You've pretty much done everything in IndyCar. What's something you want to like go out and do before you like hang it up for good?
It would be cool to do Le Mans.
Okay.
It would be cool to do Le Mans. Yeah. And be within a chance to win it in a car that could win it. That would be something I would like to do.
Have you ever been to Le Mans?
I have not. No, haven't. Not the event. I have raced there when I was racing in Europe. I raced the small track, the Bugatti track, or whatever they call it. But
okay,
Race that in an open wheel car, junior category. But yes, I haven't actually been to that event.
Okay, all right. I think that's all I got for you, Will. Thanks for. Hate that it took so long to get you connected, but I appreciate you taking the time out of your testing to talk to me.
Yeah, no, Bob, thank you. Appreciate you having me on, and hopefully see you at the race.
All right, well, good luck, and good luck getting that first oval win in four years.
Yeah. Yep, I'll be there. I'll see if I see you on the podium. I'll be cheering. I'll be cheering at you. Like I told you, told me.
All right, man. Thanks, Will.
Go. Thank you.
All right. Thank you again to the people at Worldwide Technology Raceway for setting up that interview. And you can see Will Power and the rest of the IndyCar series competing at the track formerly known as Gateway in our hearts. That will air at 2:30 p.m. Central on NBC. But the day before that, at 6 p.m. Central on Saturday on NBC, you can see the NASCAR Cup Series try to solidify its playoff field in the regular season finale at Daytona, the Coke Zero Sugar 400. I got a factoid for you, Jared. So last year's race won by Austin Dillon, and I don't know what we want to call that race.
We learned about weather that 400.
We learned about weather 400. There you go. There it is. That way, Austin Dillon won that race in a decimated field. I think it was 10 or less cars that made it to the end.
Yeah, there was not a lot that were finishing in that race.
I wouldn't have guessed it, but that race actually finished at exactly 400 miles.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time in a very long time that the summer race at Daytona actually ended at the advertised distance of 400 miles.
Because there wasn't a lot of cars to shuffle it around. It was just I think it was that lead pack of four car, you know, Austin Dillon tried to work with like Cindric and a few other back marker cars as well too. But yeah, I mean that finished under green checkered conditions. So. Yeah.
But okay, so Jared, here's my pop quiz for you. Before last year, when was the last time the Summer Cup race at Daytona finished at exactly 400 miles?
That wasn't this year, wasn't 2022, wasn't 21, wasn't
it? It'd been a long time.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go back. Like mid-early 2010s. I'm going to throw out 2013.
Almost. 2012.
Yeah.
Won by Tony Stewart. So it had been a decade since that race had ended at exactly 400 miles. I don't think that's going to happen this weekend. Do you?
Well, it depends what we get. Do we get weather or not and how the field comes out too? But, I mean, you're right. It depends on the players. If we have a lot of people that are looking for that win to get in, you're probably going to finish under caution with that. You have like Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman racing with Daniel Suarez, AJ Allmendinger.
Bubba Wallace.
Yeah.
Well, Ty Gibbs.
I mean, Bubba Wallace, all he needs to do, I think his strategy is just not wreck. You know, if he scores some stage points.
Yeah, get some stage points.
If he scores some stage points, he builds a little bit more cushion. He can just relax a little bit, not get shuffled out. But, you know, Bubba Wallace is a competitor. He's not going to roll over with that. And arguably, he's performed well at Super Speedway races.
He's finished second at Daytona three times.
Yes.
Including once in this race 2 years ago to Ryan Blaney. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., of course, won the Daytona 500 in February. That, of course, ended under caution. Not a run to the flag, unfortunately.
That was just a chaotic race.
Yeah. Yeah,
we were both there for that one.
Yeah, and that I thought that race was going to come down to Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski both fighting to get their first Daytona 500 win.
And what was the wreck that happened? I don't even remember what.
It was Austin Dillon got involved in one wreck, and then Kyle Busch was involved, I think, in that final caution, I believe. I was actually in the care center when all this stuff was going on, because I was trying to keep track of the driver interviews coming out of the care center. But, I mean, yeah, Kyle Busch, and, I mean, he was the late contender, but Greg Kozlowski was early on, and, again, the Fords do well at super speedways.
All right, so with one spot left to lock in for the playoffs, Bubba Wallace currently in that spot. Ty Gibbs is the first one out. Who first off, okay, does the winner of this race become a playoff contender, or is it going to be a repeat winner?
I see it more likely. I see that it's going to be first and foremost. I see the scenario more likely that the winner is going to get in compared to like Suarez or Ty Gibbs jumping Bubba Wallace in points. But, I mean, you have to deal with, you know, also Kozlowski got locked in the playoffs. Yeah. You have RFK Racing. You have quite a bit of people that perform well at these super speedways already locked in the playoffs. I think the one wild card would be Cindric.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be another driver that you're going to have to look out for, because
You brought up RFK. This is with Kozlowski being locked in, this is the first time the RFK, formerly known as Roush Fenway, has had more than one car locked into the playoffs since 2014, since the end of the Carl Edwards era. So, again, that team's showing
improvement.
Massive improvement.
Brad Kozlowski's put over, but, you know, I wouldn't put past it. But I think it's going to be somebody else that's already won is going to win this race.
Okay. All right. So who you got?
You might as well just put a hat right here and just have me draw a name out. Honestly, I think that'd be the best thing. Because I could give you a whole bunch of Fords, could give you Kozlowski, I could give you Chris Buescher, I could give you Logano, I could give you Kyle Busch. At the end of the day, it's just throw them in the hat and see what I can pick out as a winner. Just randomize it.
Okay. I'm picking Kozlowski to win. I'm going to pick Kozlowski to win the Super Speedways until he does. I'm going to do that because he's always in the mix.
Oh, he is. He,
every race this year, he's been in the mix at the end.
Yeah.
So I'm picking him until he does it. So I'm picking Kozlowski to win, and I'm picking Bubba Wallace to lock himself into the playoffs after an uneventful gets a few stage points night.
We'll see, but yep, this will be it, and I will actually be somewhere else this weekend. I will not be in Daytona. I will be up in Milwaukee Mile covering the Truck Series race and ARCO Menards Series for frontstretch.com that is happening this weekend. So
yes, this is the Craftsman Truck Series. This is its first race at the Milwaukee Mile since 2009.
Yes,
so it has been a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was a mainstay on the schedule. But it was on it for a while.
Oh, I mean, Milwaukee's a historic track. It's been
1903.
It's over 100 years old. So it's unique to be there. This will be my first time here. Unique to cover that. So I'll be able to cover that stuff. And then by the time we get back to the hotel, that's when the NASCAR Cup Series race is supposed to be on. So
all right.
I'll be catching it in a different state, but I'm excited to do that part as well, but there's a lot of different moving parts.
Well, I actually wish I could be there because that is a historic track, and I do kind of want to see what that's like, because we've been to Road America. I stopped by Slinger once on my trip up to Road America just to check out that track. Looked incredible. Looked really cool. But I have not laid eyes on the Milwaukee Mile. But yeah, and you can see Jared's coverage from the Milwaukee Mile at frontstretch.com and the frontstretch.com YouTube channel. But the main event, of course, will be Saturday night at Daytona at 6 p.m. Central on NBC. And we will be back here next week to recap that race and set you up for the 10-race playoffs. So we will see you back here next week. I'm Daniel McFadden. You can catch me on Twitter at Daniel McFadden, or you can email me about the show at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. And where can they find you, Jared?
Find me with the same username, at RealJaredHaas on X, formerly known as Twitter.
All right. Well, that's it for this week's episode of Dropping the Hammer. I'm Dale McFadden. We will see you next week right back here. Take care.